VorpalNetwork.com.
I'm Chris Perkins. I'm a leap year baby.
Chris is 10 today.
That's right. And your friendly Canadian, I'm here and with the tome.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 96. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interviews show, and I'm your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we'll be fighting off the hordes of evil on the strength of our own skill with martial power. This episode is brought to you by RPGNow.com, GMDice.com, and listeners like you. Thanks for using The Tome's Amazon store. In this episode, we will chat with regular contributor Will Wong, who is also known as Freezer on the forums, and Quinn Murphy, who is known as Game Fiend over on his blog called At Will. It's a great blog that focuses on almost exclusively on making your 4th edition D&D game better. Before I chat about martial power, however, I wanted to give you my RPG Now pick for this episode. RPGNow.com sells digital copies of all your favorite books in fully searchable PDFs that can be used on any computer platform. Not only can you get martial power for $20.97, but you can also get my pick for this episode, Pact of the Angelic Choirs from Adamant Games. It's a $2 10-page little file that simply gives you a new warlock pact for, you guessed it, angelic choirs. A concept that makes buckets full of sense to me. And for $2, it's really easy to snag this without really giving it a second thought. And it's something that you'll only get in digital form. Check out these products linked in the show notes from RPGNow.com. Now, let's look at Martial Power. Martial Power is the first book focused on a single power source for 4th edition D&D. It makes sense for them to choose this power source for the first book, considering that there are four well-developed classes in the Player's Handbook 1 that deals with the martial power source. This book is looking to accomplish a few things, it seems. Showing you a bunch of new options for your martial characters, giving you back some of the options and flexibility that you kind of got used to in previous editions. And it also brings in some of the old sacred components of older editions, like the ranger having an animal companion. It might also run the risk of muddling the classes a bit, which is something we discuss in our review. And lastly, as we reviewed this book, we also found that apparently it has a secret, sinister third goal. That is, to convince you to play martial class tieflings. It's all part of the sinister plot of Wizards of the Coast to get us all to fall in love with infernal beings. Maybe all those people in the 80s were right about D&D. No, now I'm just being dumb. But before we get into the full discussion with Will Wong and Quinn the Game Fiend, let's look at the pick of the episode from GMDice.com. This time around, I'm taking a long, hard look at the fake leather dice bags for only $3. I have a middle school D&D club that I'm running, and what better gift to give my 8 little darlings who are giving the game a shot for the first time than some cheap dice in their own little dice bag? And for $3, that's something I can even afford to do on a teacher's salary. It makes me wonder why I still have adult players showing up with Ziploc baggies of dice to my regular game. These dice bags, and more, are waiting for you at GMDice.com, because you can never have enough dice. Okay, so I am here today with Will Wong, regular contributor to the show, and Quinn the Game Fiend from the At Will Gaming blog. Welcome both of you to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Hello.
And real fast, just to get this out of the way, Quinn, give people the address so they can find your blog, so if they like what they hear from you here on the show, they can find you and hop over to it.
Sure. It's at will, at-will, dot omnivangelist dot net. And we're there, and we do pretty much exclusively 4th ed stuff. Some things that are lots of GM resources, everything from brainstorming to running skill challenges, lots of different stuff related to 4E.
Great. And that will be linked in the show notes, so if you have trouble remembering the address, go to thetomeshow.com and follow the link. So, we are discussing martial power today. This is the first book for 4th edition that's come out that sort of expands on one of the power sources, dealing obviously with the martial power. Written by Rob Hinsu, David Noonan, Robert J. Schwab, and Chris Sims. All names that are fairly well trusted in the D&D community.
I don't actually look at who wrote these, so I'll take your word for it, Jeff.
I didn't used to look at who wrote them, and then I started doing a podcast.
Right. That makes sense.
Right, because then I started saying, oh, who do I need to think about when I want to get interviews? So I started paying attention, and now I start recognizing names. And a lot of these people I've talked to now, so I can start
further reason to recognize them.
I can start putting faces with names.
That's got to help.
So this book just sort of dives right into the classes. It's basically broken up in such a way that the different chapters, or at least the first four chapters, there's a chapter for each of the martial classes. You have a fighter chapter, a ranger chapter, a rogue chapter, and a warlord chapter. And then it finishes off with a everything else chapter, giving you feats and epic destinies. So we will be jumping right in here then with the fighter chapter, which is chapter 1. And it gives you some new build options for the fighter.
Yeah, this is the part I think is sort of some of the builds that they offer here are the biggest thing to get excited about. Like, the powers are great. I mean, there's a ton of them. But just stuff like for the fighter, you know, being able to have the Battle Rager fighter, which is like a borderline barbarian, or the sort of poor man's ranger in the Tempest fighter, are pretty interesting.
Yeah, well, from what the playtest looked like off of DDI, the ranger isn't very much like the barbarian.
Well, the big advantage that the Battle Rager gets is this Battle Rager Vigor class feature, which gives you temporary hit points when you get hit. So you've got this sort of constant stack of temporary hit points sitting on top of your normal hit points, making you a lot more durable in a fight.
Yeah. And they're invigorating powers, which are a new keyword. The invigorating powers grant temporary hit points equal to your con modifier when you hit something with a power that has this keyword, only once per turn. Blah blah blah. Those, if you're a battle rager, those stack with your battle raging temporary hit points.
What I found with the battle rager vigor is that it almost acts like a little bit squishier version of a constant DR for the fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Oh, and it's cool too because it also sort of widens a sort of range of different fighter concepts. With a battle rager, with a temporary hit point sort of cushion, with that constant DR like you were referencing there, you're sort of encouraged to play more aggressively because they also have a thing where, you know, you get hit and if you get hit melee or in an up close attack, you get hit points there. But if someone's shooting at you at range, you're just going to take losses and losses to your hit points and not get anything back. So it behooves you to get up there, you know, if there's a wizard in the back taking pot shots, either have one of your buddies take him out or, like, run up to him. So, you know, it's another way for the fighter to get in trouble, you know, as he rushes in and, you know, I'll take it, and, you know, discovers he doesn't get that many temporary hit points. But it's also sort of it's probably the most aggressive of the sort of basic builds but between martial power and the core that they offer.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Tempest was pretty aggressive, but I don't know.
The Tempest Technique class feature is the other option that they give you here, where it's basically making a fighter who's the two-weapon fighter. Any thoughts?
Which was to see, because I don't see any reason why you shouldn't be able to wield two weapons. Without the Tempest Technique, It's pretty pointless to use two weapons because it's, okay, I have a longsword and I have a little weapon. I'm just going to keep using my longsword unless you're going to throw your little weapon, but you might as well just use a two-hander or a shield. They're both going to do better by you.
Absolutely, especially the way the powers are written for 4th edition is that very seldom does having two weapons benefit you unless the power is specifically written for that.
It's true, yeah. And the Tempest fighter is really cool, just because you sort of get a little bit of that. I guess one of the bad things about it is it seems like maybe it encroaches on the striker world a bit. You can do quite a bit of damage with the Tempest techniques and some of the stuff that you have there.
It's not going to explode with Hunter's Quarry or that kind of thing.
It's true.
Yeah, but I mean, ultimately, a lot of the classes are built to be a certain role, but about half of them are built to be that role, but sort of edging towards another one. You know, in the same way that the Paladin is a defender, but really edges towards leader.
Right.
Which is intentional. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the new keywords like the invigorating powers, and then the other one is the rattling power, where you get.
Yeah, let me read it off here. If you are trained in Intimidate and you deal damage with an attack that has this keyword, the target takes a -2 penalty to attack rolls until the end of your next turn. A creature immune to fear is not subject to this penalty.
Right. As much as these new keywords really add a lot of, like, this is what you can do with a power in the game, it also starts adding a lot more things for me to remember. I'm finding, you know, because you keep adding keywords and keywords and keywords, and I had the core ones down pretty well, but you add martial power into it, and I know already there's no way I'm going to remember all these.
It's only two more keywords. Or are you talking about all the new builds, too, and the feats?
Well, but there's two new keywords here, and somehow I doubt this is where it's going to stop.
Well, you can always buy the keyword handbook coming out in late 2009.
Have they announced the keyword handbook?
No, I'm just
saying. I was going to say, holy cow.
But probably they've
always added that to the lineup.
It'll be more of a pamphlet. Or the DM screen 2.
Well, I'm sure it's all on the compendium on D&D Insider.
Mm-hmm.
Which I can't find a thing on that.
Yeah, I find the compendium to not be nearly as useful as I was hoping it would be, because it doesn't include a lot of the things I want to be able to reference when I'm online. Because when I'm online, I'm doing a lot of my prep, so I want to be able to reference monster stats and powers.
Oh no, yeah, I like the compendium. Okay, so I haven't made heavy use of it there, but the few times I've hey, let me look up the stats for that kobold or something. It's usually been pretty easily in touch, but
yeah.
Again, I haven't tried to put it through its paces.
Sure. Yeah, and I haven't used it in a long time because the first time I used it, I was, it was okay. Now, the character generator, that's something I'll be talking about later because I think that has a lot of potential.
Yeah, that's going to be really good when it comes out with the full version.
But back into the fighter and off of that tangent. We get then into the powers. Are there any specific powers that really shine for you? I know there's a lot of little sidebars throughout this, and the fighter's no exception, sort of giving you some racial information of this is why a dragonborn would make a good fighter, or this is why a dwarf makes a good fighter. But besides that, anything else that you see in the fighter section that really stands out that we should be talking about?
I didn't really go of the powers, expecting to talk about them. So, no help here.
Well, I'm obsessive about the stuff, so I've had martial power for a bit, and I've gone, in and out for this, for just even to help my players sort of figure out what stuff they might want out of it. One of the themes I like here is, when I've been looking at the martial power, I think about it in sort of general terms of like what styles of powers that they're trying to introduce. And one of the things I like with the fighter, and you see it a little bit with the rogue, is they add in charging powers. So now you can charge, and instead of just doing, I charge and I tack on a melee basic attack to the end of it, which is, fine, but not really exciting. You get something like at level 3, Rhino Strike, mm-hmm. where you charge forward. And, smack some guy for 2W. Again, not, the only thing is, they really add on to it is if you have a shield, you don't provoke opportunity attacks, which is actually pretty nice. It means you can just charge right up the middle of a battlefield mm-hmm. and hit the target you want to hit without dying first, which is nice. You know, but from there, it's pretty pedestrian. It's not like, you know, I do double weapon and daze you or anything. But then they start to get a little more, you know, complex. Say, you know, just moving up to level 5 where you get Comet Fall there. And, you know, that one, again, it's just a damage power, but it's pretty hefty. It's 3W plus your strength plus the constitution. I like the charge power that they add in a lot. The invigorating stuff is pretty nice. Obviously, if you're using a Battle Rager. And then for just style points, carve initials. It's a level 15 daily where you just Zoro your opponent.
and it does 4 weapon and strength.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they are super marked for the encounter.
Yeah, like they are, you know, they're pretty much branded for the rest of the encounter. So, you know, I just like the style points of that one.
That reminds me a lot. I had a character way back in the second edition days, a character that I DM'd for who used a Warhammer, but then had his nickname was the Hammer, and he engraved the Hammer into his Warhammer so that when he hit people, if it hit them hard enough, it would emboss it into their armor or their flesh or whatever.
Wouldn't it have to be engraved backwards?
Yes.
Okay.
But you get the idea.
Yes.
After all the powers, then we get into some new Paragon paths for the fighters.
Yes.
Including the return of the Dwarven Defender.
Yeah.
Oh, and boy. The Dreadnought?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Dreadnought is basically, he's kind of what he is, what he says he is. He's essentially just sort of a walking, I resist everything that you're going to throw at me. The Dreadnought is like a...
I was just wondering what book he was from. I did read all the Paragon paths. Yeah. I didn't get terribly deep into the different powers.
I find Paragon paths to be a lot more interesting to read than powers.
Yeah.
Well, when you're not making characters or preparing to fight characters, yeah.
Right. But you basically get a Paragon path designed for most of the races that would do well as a fighter. I don't know if quite all of the races have their own Paragon path, but most of them do.
And plus, one or two races that don't do well as a fighter.
Yeah. Plus you have some that are just different ways of focusing your fighter. You know, the Polearm Master, Shield Adept. You've got the Ravager, which plays off of the Battle Rager Vigor class feature that we talked about.
And they've clip-arted... I want to say that's the Frenzied Berserker picture from last edition.
Third edition.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's usually pretty glaring to me as I go through... The first time when I go through some of these books and I see reused art from third edition... it stands out to me right away. Usually after I've gone through it a few times, that stops bothering me. You know, that really bothered me about the Monster Manual when the 4th edition first came out. They reused some 3rd edition art. Now, I barely notice it.
Yeah.
What I notice more and what drives me more nuts is when I look at a Paragon path that doesn't have any picture at all.
Yeah.
As much as it seems like it shouldn't matter... as a DM, when I'm looking for quick information or I'm looking for a quick idea for an NPC, I'll just flip through something until I see a picture that sort of looks like it might work for my NPC. You know? Mm-hmm. And then I don't have to read through everything. So having those pictures actually helps me a lot mechanically as a DM. Mm-hmm. Well, anything else on the fighter?
Just on the Paragon path, quick, I just want to... My favorite one out of that one... is the Inner Dragon. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was probably the coolest Paragon path. You know, it's a racial one for the Dragonborns.
Okay, that one's just cool.
And it's just cool, you know. There are a lot of different ways you can enter into it for a different effect. It seems kind of made for the Battle Rager.
Was that a Bruce Lee reference right there? A lot of ways you can enter the Inner Dragon?
I didn't mean it to be, but it could be. That would make it seem
well, you can't until monks come out.
Right. We're going to say it was intentional just to make you look all the cooler.
Nice. Nice. I like that. But yeah, other than the inner dragon there, I think, you know, that's probably the most, for me, the coolest of all the Paragon paths. But I think I'm ready to move to Rain.
Yeah, right on.
Just the getting to reuse your breath weapon off an action point, that's very good.
Cool. And then the second chapter is the Ranger. The Ranger gives you basically one big new thing, but it takes several pages of rules to explain it, and that's the Beastmaster type of Ranger. You finally have some rules for bringing in animal companions, something that we've been wondering about for ages. When we noticed a lack of animal companions, we noticed a lack of familiars and that kind of stuff, and now we're starting to see maybe a little bit of how they're going to handle that.
I, for one, was glad they were gone, but I'm probably in a very small minority.
So the way the Beast Mastery works is that you choose that as your class feature instead of being an archery ranger or being a two-weapon ranger. You're a Beast Master ranger. And then you choose a type of companion, either a bear, a boar, a cat, a lizard, a raptor, a serpent, a spider, or a wolf. They have some basic statistics, but then they get better as you level up. And so you don't end up having that issue where you, like in 3rd edition, where my animal companion can no longer keep up with me, really, so I need to let him go and then summon, you know, find a new one and do all that kind of stuff. They continuously get better and better.
They scale with you.
Yeah, they keep up with you better than the 3rd edition version did.
All of their stuff is a number plus their level, or your level.
Right.
Except for their damage, which is static.
But what's different about them is that they don't get their own action. They don't get to do their own thing. All of the stuff that a beast companion does in a fight is based off of the power that you use. If you, as the ranger, are using a power with the beast keyword, then that means it's an attack you're doing with your beast. They become a part of you that just takes up an extra square on the map.
I've got to check. Are you going to be able to keep track of the beast keyword, Jeff?
Yeah, that one's pretty easy. I think I can handle that. That's about as easy mechanically to remember as implement or weapon is. There's no minuses or pluses or what have you going on anywhere.
But it took 2.5-3 pages to explain.
Yes, but once you've statted that out, you're good to go. Now, here's my sort of, I don't know, almost concern when I look at the, and maybe this is intentional, because I don't think it unbalances things, but when you take the three different builds that we have for a ranger now, they're very, very different from each other.
Okay, and if you mash them all together, then you get Drizzt.
Well, and it's easy to mash them together, I've discovered. I've had a ranger in my game that I'm running since the beginning who's been an archery ranger, and all of a sudden martial power comes out. I let him do some retraining. He gets rid of the archery and picks up the beast class feature.
And he's shooting people like nothing ever happened?
But he's still just as good of an archer as he was. Now he just has an animal companion.
Yeah, now he has basically, like, if he wants, a tank.
Right.
Right? He can sort of go through and put the beast on something. And can't you determine your quarry from where your beast is, too?
That might be, yeah.
And, you know, so, yeah, I mean, the beast mastery is really the one you want to go with if you want to go with, like, a hybrid approach. Like, you know, if you wanted to say, hey, I want to be decent at archery and I want to do some melee stuff. And have a cool animal pet. The Beastmaster sort of lets you do that.
You get them all. Yeah. Well, and that's, I guess that sort of works for the previous versions of the Ranger have always been that sort of hybrid. And so you can continue to make that hybrid now that you have the Beastmaster out there. It just seems like they're very different. And in a system like 4th edition where, I mean, you can really take a God's eye approach to classes and very much create a classless system and just let people pick and choose from whatever. And you can do that with 4th edition because everything's standardized across the classes. It almost feels like with the Ranger, it would have been just as easy to create a Beastmaster class that was separate from the Ranger, and you couldn't do all that kind of stuff. You'd have to multi-class to do it.
You know, you don't get anything, really, for being an Archer Ranger. It doesn't make you a better Archer in any way.
It doesn't give you much.
You know, all you get is defensive mobility, and if you're a human, you can just take that with your bonus feed.
Oh yeah, just now going back with what you were saying. Yeah, I mean, I definitely see what you're saying there. Was that, you know, you could just take the Beastmaster is so different from the other two builds that you could just split it off, make this other thing, and if you wanted a Ranger with the Beast stuff, you just, you know, the multi-classing rules actually, you know, not to open up the multi-classing debate, you know, because I know that can be contentious, but you know, I think they work. You know, and you could just use it for that. I guess they're almost compelled to do it though, because people were sort of expecting the Rangers to have it.
Just yeah. Player outrage, you mean?
Yeah, but yeah, it's their way of sort of addressing player outrage, right? Like, okay, well, you wanted your Beast companions, here they are.
And it's yeah, and I get that. At the same time, what is my incentive to be an archery Ranger? I could be a two-weapon fighting Ranger or a Beastmaster Ranger and still get all of the
right, and you're still
benefits
just
of an archery Ranger.
Aren't there any? Yeah. No, there aren't. There don't seem to be any powers that say, you know, if you're an archery Ranger, you get to do this.
No,
I don't. I'm scrolling through and I don't see any powers like that.
No,
there aren't any. No.
There are other classes that do that, but not in the Ranger. Class.
Yeah, I was going to say, is this the only class that doesn't have that?
This is the class that seems to, at least now, really encourage mixing and mashing and making a hybrid.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if the base stats that you're going to want to focus on are the same for all of the different builds. Is it all strength and dex no matter what?
It's pretty much strength and dex.
And then so wisdom is their bonus. There's their bonus damage.
Yeah. So if you do strength and dex as your primary stats and wisdom as your backup, you could make a very passable hybrid ranger that can do everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like a dwarf or an elf.
Any thoughts on any of the powers?
The powers are, you know, after you sort of get through the initial, like, wow, that's cool of the Beastmaster, most of the powers aren't really so impressive. I mean, you have your powers that you can do for your beast stuff. Yay, beast powers. But most of the other powers are just sort of, for me, seem like just tweaks or additional kind of continuations of other threads in the player's handbook. One that I'll point out that I think is very cool is Ruffling Sting. Mm-hmm. And the cool thing about it, it's by any means sort of a ordinary power. It's a 1W strength attack with your offhand weapon, but it's a minor action, which is pretty nice.
Uh-huh.
So you can sort of, you know, be going through, throw in a standard action, throw in your minor action, and just get to add in that extra one. And they have a few attacks like that. The only problem, I think, with Sting is that I believe at level 3 it's competing with Disruptive Strike. Which is GMing for a Ranger is I see the power of that ability and hate it. you're like, I'm gonna smack the Ranger, and he's like, no, you don't. Uh-huh. And then he dances away. So I'm not sure at a level where you get Disruptive Strike that you could get that one, but the powers that are like that where you can attack with minor action is pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, because that's when you can start pulling off, like, yeah, I use my phase step to teleport, and then I attack seven times, you know, between my standard and my minor actions, you know, and then I throw an action point in there. That's like, you know, that's that round where you go in and move at hyper speed.
Yeah, exactly, where you're just like, I'm going to go Nova this round and, you know, start rolling a lot of dice,
yeah.
Which is always fun.
And you mentioned that there's a bunch of the beast powers to go with the new Beastmaster Ranger.
Mm-hmm.
Just an example for people, the beast powers are all things like, some of them are, you know, you have your beast attack in a certain way and do this much damage and what have you. Other times it's more like you and your beast work together to, you know, flank or to do this or that and accomplish some sort of attack. Yeah. But I just wanted to give people an idea of sort of how the beast powers worked and how they felt different than other
Let
powers.
Me see if I can just find a random beast power. Here's one. Knockdown Pounce. It's a 13 encounter. It's a beast 1. Target is one creature designated as your quarry. Before the attack, your beast companion can shift its speed. Then it does 2 weapon plus strength, and you push the target 1 square, knock it prone. And then the bonus is, it says beast. If your companion is a bear, boar, cat, or raptor, you instead push it 2 squares.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get a lot of those little, depending on which animal you chose, you get special extra things, depending on which powers you pick and what have you.
Yeah, it really does seem like they had to build all of this new stuff for the Beastmaster, as though he was almost his own class.
Absolutely.
Oh, definitely.
Well,
I know the feats and the Paragon paths are that way.
Maybe you guys can answer if you've maybe looked a little more carefully or remember better than I do. If it says that you're doing, 2 weapon damage on a beast attack, is that
It's going to be twice your beast damage.
Is it your beast? Because I also only
if it has the B.
If
C uses your beast, and then the W will use your actual weapon.
There it is.
I knew it was somewhere.
So
I thought you were talking about that. Sorry.
The ones that say W on it are ones that are where you're working with your beast, but you're the one actually doing the attack. Mm-hmm. And the one that have the B on it are the ones where you're actually having your beast do the attack. So that's, I guess, turning the mechanics into your flavor. That's how these things sort of work out.
Yeah, there's one 2B plus beast strength mod.
Great. Then it gets into. Okay. Did you have one more thing to say?
Oh yeah. Just a couple things there. For the beast attacks, they tend to sort of make like either you or the beast the star. The one thing I found missing was there aren't a lot of attacks where you both get to come in and smack some guy.
Yeah.
Which was sort of what I'd like if I had a Beastmaster guy.
Uh-huh.
And then the last one, last bit here before we move on, another power that I really just thought was really cool is a 5th level daily, the Spitting Cobra Stance. And this one is pretty much for ranged archery rangers.
Uh-huh.
There, and it's a stance you... And anytime someone moves within 5 squares of you, you get to make an opportunity attack against them. So you just get to lay down this zone of, it's almost like basically laying down suppressive fire, right, with your ranger. You just stand there. Somebody moves and you're like,
uh-huh.
And get to be Legolas. So I just thought that's a great one if you have an archery ranger. That's it.
Yeah. I've seen that used to great effect.
Once again, you don't need to be an archer to do it. Other two rangers are. Get just as much out of it. You just need quick draw.
Yeah. If you're one of the other rangers and you've got a bow, then you can pull that off just as easily.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, how long does a stance last?
Into the encounter, or until
you shift out of it.
Yep.
That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure. I don't think I had seen it defined anywhere.
Then we get into Paragon Paths, and again, you've got your mix of, you've got your Feral Spirit that ties into the Beastmaster abilities, but you've also got the ones that are tied into the various...
different races.
And
some of them are for different companions, like the Pack Runner. You must have the wolf as a beast companion.
Yeah. And then I found the Giant Slayer interesting, if for no other reason, because you can be a fighter or a ranger and take the Giant Slayer Paragon.
But it wound up in the ranger section for some reason.
Yeah. Although I thought I saw in the fighter section it mentioned it. It said, oh, by the way, you might want to look at this here as well.
Mm.
Anything else we want to look at for the Paragon Paths?
The Hellborn Shadow just continues that trend of them sort of going, no! Tieflings can fight, really. They spend a lot of energy in this book trying to sort of, because Tieflings, for whatever reason, gets a bit of a bad rap for the martial classes, I guess because they have the plus 2 intelligence and charisma, and not the strength or any of the other stuff.
Sure.
So a lot of stuff where they can sort of exploit Infernal Wrath or some sort of fiery goodness there. And then the one I love, my favorite on this one, again, style points, the Ruthless Punisher there is basically sort of like the Fonz there for no other reason but his ability of Named Dread. You speak your name. It's a utility 12, and you basically speak your name, and everybody in a burst 10 who can hear you basically gets shaken down and takes a -2 penalty to all their attack rolls. You know, it's the Fonz, no! You know, all the goblins are quaking in their boots. And
yeah. Well, that's another one that came up recently in my campaign because I have another ranger in my party.
Another ranger?
Yeah, we've got two rangers and a rogue, so we're heavy on strikers. But yeah, we've got the two rangers, and that one specifically has part of his backstory that some ranger, or not some bard, went out of his way to show his appreciation one time by singing his praises, and people, happened to be a really catchy song, and it caught on all over the place, and people kept adding verses about the fabulous things that this guy did, so his legend is so much bigger than his actual ability. And so when he saw martial power, he's like, oh, this is perfect, you know, I can just scream out my name, and people will freak out at my name, even though I may not do much to him.
That's awesome. Yeah, that was a great power.
And then we get into the third chapter with the rogue. We get the two new builds, but only one new class feature. They give us a build, a suggested build for the Aerialist Rogue. They give us a suggested build for the Cutthroat Rogue. I don't know. I find the builds that tend to be not real useful unless they're showing me how to use a new class feature. But the new class feature is the Ruthless Ruffian.
Yeah, I really like that.
This is the one that really makes use of that new keyword that we saw under Fighter, the rattling keyword.
Mm. Yeah, but Andy gets to use a mace.
Which is good. Yeah, it's mace or club, but the mace is a D8, so you're going to use that.
Right.
It lets you mace or club anything when one of your rogue powers normally says light blade.
Right. It seems that this is the build or the new class feature that sort of plays up the mobster that comes up and whacks you over the head and knocks you out and drags you away. Mm. Any powers for the new rogue that look interesting?
Well, of course, there's a whole slew of the new rattling powers and stuff that sort of keys off that. One of the ways that they build some of these, the Ruthless Ruffian sort of tree, is to have things where you can rattle someone, and then you can go, and then you have a power that says, if the person's already rattled, do this in addition to them.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. Just to take a peek here, I'm just looking at stuff randomly. Enforced Threat, where you make a range, or you can use crossbow, light blade, sling, and if the target is taking the attack penalty from one of your rattling attacks, you gain combat advantage for the attack, and then you do 2W plus dex modifier. So, you know, you sort of shake them down, then really hit them with something. Is sort of a theme for the Ruthless Ruffian.
Yeah. This is where, see, under the fighter, the rattling new keyword didn't come off very exciting to me. For the rogue, I think that it does some interesting things.
It does a lot of interesting things because the ruffian also can add. We'll assume he's going to be using a mace or club because that's his whole shtick. With any rattling one, he also gets to add his strength mod to the damage.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it has some interesting combinations. Sort of all of that said, though, of this book, the rogue is the part that sort of impresses me the least. You know, if I'm playing a ranger, I want to own this book. If I'm playing a fighter, I want to own this book. If I'm playing, and we're going to get to a warlord, I want to own this book. If I'm playing a rogue, I can kind of take it or leave it.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
You play rogues the rest of your life. you might as well get, and then, I mean, you could get hit by a bus or something, but assuming you continue to play D&D.
Right. But in any case, we also get our slew of new Paragon paths. They have a few that focus in on what kind of skills you use. You know, there's the cloaked sniper that has to have stealth and the daring acrobat that has to have acrobatics. You also have your ones that are connected to specific races. Interestingly, including the Dread Fang, which requires the Drow race.
It requires you to get the Player's Guide?
Yeah, the Forgotten Realms Player's Guide.
Mm-hmm.
They do... I don't know. The rogue paragon paths seem to be more focused than most of the paragon paths, mm-hmm. especially in their prerequisites, you know?
They are very focused. Well, it's also because the rogue is such a skill-heavy class.
Oh, sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. And honestly, I think it makes some of them a lot more interesting, you know? The idea that you have to not only be a rogue, but worship this certain god, or be a
yeah.
rogue.
Yeah, the Raven Herald. I thought that one was different.
Yeah.
You know, you don't see a lot of the rogues requiring any sort of particular deity.
Well, and I don't know, in my opinion there's a good reason for that, because that's very setting specific. And if my setting doesn't have the Raven Queen, I either have to find a way to replace that and reword some things to have it make sense, or just say you can't use that paragon path.
Yeah, but it's the default setting. It's not like the Green Star Adept. It's not the special magic comet from this guy's game at home. It's the default setting.
Yeah, and I get that. At the same time, since the default setting is a non-setting, it still sort of doesn't make sense to me. I mean, it's the default setting, but there is no default setting. You know, there's no actual world. There's no campaign on that default setting. But anyway, that's my thoughts on that one. But it does make it more interesting to have rogues that, you know, you have to be an intimidating kind of person, or you have to have that feat or that skill or what have you.
What's your favorite one?
My favorite one? Oh, let me...
I kind of got a kick out of the Strong Arm Enforcer.
Strong Arm Enforcer is fun.
Yeah.
I like the Halfling Quick Blade just because I like the idea of halflings cutting your throat.
Yeah. My favorite one is probably the Death Dealer. I just sort of like the thing of sort of a brutal upfront assassin type.
Mm-hmm.
You know, none of this sort of, you know, sneaking around you kind of stuff. Like, I'm just going to dance around you and hurt you very quickly. I kind of like the picture with it too.
Yeah, right on. And that leads us into the last of the martial classes, the Warlord.
Oh, we forgot to mention that once again they threw in another a tiefling specific.
Of course they did.
And you notice all
every class got one.
All of the art, yeah. All of the art opening up each of the chapters has a picture of a tiefling, or at least most of them anyway. I haven't checked all of them, but most of them it seems like have a tiefling in one of those roles. I see the Warlord has the tiefling with a burning scroll.
Where
the rogue's got a tiefling holding the mace. Let's see what if the ranger keeps up.
I don't see it in the Warlord.
The ranger does. It's on the not on the
It's on the Warlord builds.
On the builds, yeah.
Oh, it's on the builds. Okay.
Yeah. So at least half of them have tieflings in the actual pictures. The rogue and the Warlord do. So they really want you guys to try out a tiefling martial class.
Well, why would I do a similar thing like that?
I don't know.
I think they hired a press agent for the tiefling.
Yeah,
they're just pushing him so hard on this, you know. They got to ink the, you know, four class deal or something.
The art they need is
a cartoon.
Yeah, a cartoon. Only one where the tiefling isn't overshadowed by the cuteness of the gnome.
It's the badger, man. It's the badger.
The badger. I think that the art director, Ryan Sandsaver, just has a thing for tieflings and really wanted to push them in this book.
They do look cool, in all the pictures, they look cool.
They
suck as a martial class, it looks like.
But anyway, the Warlord. We have two new class features that go along with the two new builds, which, again, this is what I like the builds for, is to show me how to use the new class features. You have the Bravura Presence. Did I pronounce that anywhere close to right?
I don't know.
I think so.
All right. The Bravura Presence and the Resourceful Presence are the two new class features. Somebody tell me what the Bravura does.
The Bravura Presence, I can give you sort of the basic test here. When an ally who can see you spends an action point to take an extra action and uses that action to make an attack, they can either make a basic attack or they can take a move action after the attack. If they miss, they get they grant combat advantage to all their enemies there. So basically you spend the action point and then you can get a free attack there, or you can get a free move after, and then you'll reward them. If you mess up, there's at risk of giving combat advantage to every enemy around. The Bravura Presence in general is sort of all about risk, sort of being almost like, it's like the gambler Warlord.
Could have worded that better. I have read it like four times, and it refuses to stick in my mind what this does.
I would agree. And on the other hand, the Resourceful Presence one, it's one that seems very interesting to me. This is the one where somebody spends an action point to get an extra action, and they get a bonus to damage equal to half your level plus intelligence mod.
And then if they miss,
they get temporary hit points.
Right. This one I like, because as much as the Warlord is about buffing other people, this one seems to do it very well. Mm-hmm. And then, you've got your host of new powers, many of which play off of these two new concepts for the Warlord.
Yeah, they introduced some new at-wills. I think opening shove is one of the coolest at-wills. It does no damage. It's a strength versus reflex attack, and you push the target one square. Then from there, you pick an ally, and the ally can either shift a number of squares equal to your intelligence, or they can make a melee attack against the target, so you can sort of run up and go, here you go! And you can, feed your fighter a target. Or you can, clear the guy out of the way. You can use it just to sort of, all right, you move. All right, now you move around him. You can use it to set up flanks. It's just a wonderfully versatile power.
Yeah, right on. Any other powers that we want to highlight along the way? Maybe one that shows off how they use the new class features?
Oh, one of the Bravura-powered ones, for example?
Sure. For example, just at random, I've grabbed a level 7 encounter, Provoke Overextension, which targets one creature. It's a strength attack, does 2 weapon plus strength modifier damage, and the target must make a basic attack against you as a free action. If the basic attack misses, an ally of yours can make a basic attack against the target as a free action. So it's, they force them to attack you, but if they miss, somebody else gets to take advantage of that opening. And then, if you have the Bravura Presence, you gain a bonus to your AC against the basic attack that they're taking, equal to your charisma modifier. And your ally gets the same bonus on their attack. So it tilts the scales in your favor. It's one of those little bonuses where that way the house always wins in the long run.
Yeah.
And we can compare it to the one right above it, the Phalanx Assault for Resourceful.
Mm-hmm.
It requires you to use a shield. Oh, no. To one creature, you do 2 weapon plus strength, and allies adjacent to you get a plus 2 power bonus to AC and reflex till the end of your next turn. If you are a Resourceful, they get the plus 2 even if you miss.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite as impressive, but who knows?
Sure. And then, if nothing else, I found the little sidebar in here to be useful, titled Martial Healing, because this is an issue that came up in a previous advice episode that I've done. where we discussed how does healing make sense in 4th edition? How do healing surges make sense? How does martial healing make sense? And so I liked that they included some, yes, we recognize that this may be mechanically sound, but not make a lot of sense flavor-wise, so let us explain to you how it works. And it says, what explains your warlord's ability to heal your allies' wounds? It might seem almost magical, and certainly at highest levels, it is superhuman. But your inspiring word is fundamentally a reflection of your ability to get your allies to do their best. Under your leadership, they can draw on reserves they didn't know they had, perform heroic deeds they never thought they could, and keep fighting when the pain and terror would otherwise bring them down.
So essentially it works like an episode of Naruto, right?
Yeah.
You can do your best.
Well,
you know?
And
that works.
And what they didn't discuss in that bit, but they've discussed in other places, is you kind of have to remember that hit points are not the same thing as health. It's not you losing hit points is not the same thing as being wounded. It's you've lost some sort of advantage in the fight.
You have a little cut, so you're slowed.
Well, or they've got you on your heels, or you've been rattled. They knocked on your armor and they've rattled you, and you're not paying as good of attention for the next time around, or whatever. And that the only attack that really needs to be a serious wound to the character is the last one, the one that drops them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think of it that way, I could be a little rattled. They banged me real good on the side of my helmet. I'm a little rattled. I'm shaking. I don't know what's going on. But the warlord...
And you're -2 to hit.
Well, and then the warlord does his inspiring word. And it's that word of inspiration that sort of shakes me out of it and focuses me again. That makes sense if you think of it in those terms.
Yeah.
But jumping ahead to the Paragon Paths...
Mm-hmm.
Once again, you get your mix of Paragon Paths. I find it interesting that the Battle Lord of Kord does not have a religious requirement.
That is strange.
Even though that we've seen other ones that do. You also get another one that crosses. The Borderland Marshal could be a Warlord or a Ranger. So I think
that has to be a multi-class, right? That's Warlord and Ranger.
Oh, you're right. It does have to be multi-class. I didn't even see that the first time I read that.
Yeah, they sort of are looking at a sort of specific multi-class thing. And I think they, in one of the dragons, they have more feats like that, more multi-class paragon paths like that, and I bet you we'll see more in the future.
Sure.
Of
well,
those.
It adds an interesting dynamic to the multi-classing. As you alluded to earlier, multi-classing can be a bit of a contentious feature in that some people like it and some people don't like the way it works. And the more functionality you add to it like that, the more I think multi-classing works in the system.
Definitely.
You don't seem to have as many racially based warlords. You have a couple based on the new class features. The first racially based one that I see is for Genasi, interestingly enough, because that's once again only in the Forgotten Realms player's book.
It is nice to see the Forgotten Realms player's guide exclusive stuff supported in other books, because I always felt like an idiot when I got Arcane, for example,
and you
go the whole
else.
Rest of the edition
it's a careful balance though.
Oh yeah, it is.
Because I mean, you do that too much, and it's like, well, why should I buy the new Martial Power book when I can't use half of it because I didn't buy those other books? Now for somebody like me who pretty much buys everything anyway, it's good to see that, but I can totally see why that doesn't work. For a business plan. On the other hand, as I flip through again to look at these, I just want to point out I don't see a Tiefling Warlord.
Yeah, I was getting ready to comment on that. This is actually the only one, and it's funny because this is the one where they probably talk about Tieflings the most. They're always like, they talk about this sort of in several places, this sort of famous Tiefling warlords and Dragonborn warlords, and
strategist.
Well, yes. And it's funny also because if the tiefling were to play any of these classes,
it would be the warlord.
It would be the warlord because they get the charisma.
Yeah.
Right. And intelligence.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, they could run, you know, they'd be really good for the resourceful. They could run either a tactical or inspiring. Like they're actually pretty good warlords, I think.
Right. They don't actually have to hit anything themselves.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, let's go ahead and jump into the last chapter, chapter 5, entitled Martial Options. Because we are knocking on an hour of recording time. Now, editing will cut some of that out, but I don't like to edit more than I have to.
Yeah.
Ha-ha.
Okay.
So let's sharing the secrets of the trade. Let's jump into martial options then. It's basically just new feats and epic destinies.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you get some of the obvious feats.
You get some really specific feats.
You do. You have to be a halfling fighter.
Yeah, or the halfling must be halfling warlord with bravura presence.
Absolutely, and I think that works because you're trying to give them options to add more flavor to a specific type of build, and they do a really nice job of dividing out the feats. You know,
it's a whole new book. Why not?
Right,
there's a whole
section on just fighter feats. There's a whole section on just ranger feats, and a whole section on rogue feats. And so it works because it's
and it was nice of them to put those each on their own table.
Absolutely, it's easier to find and easier to work with that way. And I applaud them for it.
Mm-hmm.
Any specific feats that we want to point out? Again, they're very specific. It's very much I want to be this type of build, and this feat's going to help me accentuate that. Anything that's just stands out.
Looking at, I like to look at sort of from a design perspective, sort of what themes they're putting in there. And I like this theme that they have in there for the for the ranger and the rogue of the different actions. You have the predatory action, the ranger, and the slain action for the rogue. And basically what those let you do is double up on your quarry or your sneak attack if you spend an action point. So if you're deciding to go Nova, there you can actually, I'll use my power, use my sneak attack once, and then on my action point power, use it again. And I just sort of like that mechanically. Like, it's one of those things that sort of rewards, players. Like, you have this great sneak attack Hunter's Quarry feature, and you can really use the heck out of it if you want, to invest the feat in it.
Uh-huh.
I like that one.
Very good. That is really nice, especially when use some power that's going to give you combat advantage, and then you action point.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were flanking, and then, or you were concealed. Because that one will end.
Good, and then we finish off with. I guess we should talk a little bit about they include some multi-class stuff, which makes sense. But they try to add multi-class stuff to play into some of the new build options.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got your two-blade warrior or your tactical leader, mm-hmm. which is variants on, if you want to be a ranger multi-class but a specific type of ranger multi-class, then you're going to take this multi-class feat instead of the core one.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes sense because, I mean, again, the ranger at this point is almost three completely different classes, or could be. So if you have multi-class feats that play into that, that works for me.
Mm-hmm. And you can also use it to get any specific powers. So if you wanted to use, if there's a paragon path that's like fighter, but most also have combat superiority, say, then you get battle acumen. So you can multi-class and actually get those things that require that would otherwise require you to be an actual fighter.
Yeah.
Although
they're still very careful about protecting those individual roles. I keep looking for the rogue multi-class feats that's going to allow me to sneak attack.
Yeah.
Because you could combine that to do some really powerful things. But I think they've avoided that, and for good reason, because I think it would be unbalancing.
It was. Oh, yeah. They immediately errated that, so you couldn't do that. So you couldn't sneak attack with Fireball.
Right. As much as that would be cool, it just mechanically unbalances things.
It was cool for about a week, and then they went, we can't let this go. We got to stop this.
Right. And then they get into Epic Destinies.
I was fairly unimpressed with the Epic Destinies.
Well, Epic Destinies, I guess...
I know they're the hardest thing to do and everything.
In my mind, a good Epic Destiny is chock full of flavor of this is how your mm-hmm. character is going to retire. This is how they're mm-hmm. going to end their career as an adventure. But some of these Epic Destinies, and some of the Epic Destinies we've seen all over the place, work really well to me mechanically as this is what I'm doing when I'm in the Epic tier. But they don't really explain to me this is how I finish my career. You know, the Beast Lord I can see running off and being a hermit off in the woods and hanging out with the animals and no longer associating with society.
Something like some of them, I think, end up retiring with the gods or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the Dark Wanderer...
That's just a cop-out.
The Dark Wanderer works for me.
Dark Wanderer, I think, is a clear... For me, the clear winner here. Just yeah, like, yeah. You know, someone kills you, you just come walking back down the road and be like, ah, you made me angry. And then when you retire, you just sort of walk off. You know, that one was really cool.
Well, and even the God Hunter, you know, you finish your career going off and killing gods themselves. That works for me. Now, the martial archetype, the perfect assassin, the war master, these are ones that mechanically make sense for somebody who's in the epic tier, but doesn't really tell me this is how they finish their career as an adventurer.
Yeah, I thought the martial archetype in particular was pretty weak. Probably the weakest of the ones you just mentioned there. Mm-hmm. There's just sort of, you know, please try again on that one, but...
But it's not very epic.
Yeah.
You know, your character retires and he decides to teach. Okay, and yeah. he's famous and all. You know, he's famous and you know everybody's like, oh, he's using the Quinn technique, look out. But yeah. that's not very impressive.
Well, and one of the things I like from a really good Epic Destiny is explain to me why this person is no longer saving the world. And if they're mm-hmm. if they've gone off to become a teacher, that doesn't tell me why they're not saving the world. They're too busy grading papers now.
Yeah, because we all know that at a moment's notice, Jeff is willing to fly into action to do whatever it was he did before he taught, if it would save the world.
Absolutely. In fact, I can speak from experience that all teachers. have the ability to jump in and save the world if necessary, and so it just doesn't make sense that
I know that you are prepared at a moment's notice to you know drop the teaching and wait tables for a couple of weeks if it will save the earth.
If that's what I've got to do, it's been known to happen. In any case, that's Martial Power. Any last thoughts you guys have on Martial Power?
I mean, just overall, I mean, it's definitely worth, you know, if you're running a game or part of a game and you're using one of the four classes here, it's definitely worth a pickup. It's just got a lot of different options. And, you know, if you're obsessive like me, you've already bought it anyway, just for completeness. But it is a worthwhile pickup for players.
Okay. Any last thoughts?
How do you run part of a game? Quinn, how do you run part of a game?
No, if you're part of a game, not running.
Oh, okay. Okay. I totally misheard that.
So that's your final thoughts?
My final thought was obliterated by the idea of running part of the game.
Okay.
Just going, how does he do it? Does he just run the first half? Does he just run combat?
My sort of summary of Martial Power is that if you are running a martial character, this book adds so many more options, you almost have to use it in order to keep up.
Oh, yeah. I'm totally going to get all of the assorted power books as they
absolutely.
Come out.
So, I would say the book is essential for if you're going to play a martial character. If you're playing a rogue, maybe not as much, but even then... I think it's still worth it for the rogues, even when
I'd do it for the rogue. I want to club people.
If for nothing, well, okay, but if for nothing else, when you're getting into the feats and that kind of stuff, it does give you a lot of those specific things, and you get into the Paragon paths, it gives you a lot there. So I think it's still strong enough to stand up to the $29.95 cover price, which of course at the Tomes Amazon store right now, as of recording, you can get it for $19.77, which I think is well worth the price.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
All right. Well, that's Marshall Power, and thank you, gentlemen, for joining us on this review.
Anytime. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, we'll have to get you on again. And make sure you check out Quinn the Game Fiend at the At Will blog. And there's Marshall Power. I hope you enjoyed our review, and I hope you check out our sponsors for this episode, RPGNow.com and GMDice.com. Tell them that the Tome Show sent you. And that's episode 96. Email me at thetomeshow@gmail.com or swing by the forums and tell me how the tweaks I've made to the format for our sponsors have been working out for you. Tell people about the show and help us grow, and check out the Tomes Amazon store. The show gets part of the proceeds, and every little bit helps. Links for things mentioned in the show can be found in the show notes on the website at thetomeshow.com, and this, of course, has been episode 96, Marshall Power of...
The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome, The Tome.
I'm on the wall.